Trib Live Radio presents the Penguins Roundtable Show, featuring Trib hockey writers Jason Mackey and Jonathan Bombouli.
Wake up, superstar!
Hosted by Ken Laird.
Want to go, pretty boy? Come on.
The best hockey talk in Pittsburgh, right now on Trib Live Radio.
We're going to play some friggin' all-time hockey!
Well, I hate to sell Jason Mackey out like this, but he's Alex Ovechkin today. We didn't sleep in to miss the show. He'll be here in just a couple of minutes. It's just traffic. There actually has been a ton of traffic. The parkway shutting down. There was a big accident going out westbound, which backed up all the way to the eastbound sign today. Watch yourself out there, Tim. Anyway, Jason Mackey, our Penguins beat reporter, will be in shortly. And Jonathan Bombouli, our other Penguins reporter, is in the Pens locker room as we speak. He'll be checking in a moment. I'm Ken Laird. Every Friday from 1 to 2, the Pens Roundtable show here on Trib Live. And gives us some chance to listen in to Daniel Sprong. Sprong has sprung. Big game for the Pens last night. And a big win to go 2-0, maybe to save their coach's job. We'll ask Jason and Jonathan about that when they join us here on the program in just a bit. But elevated from fourth line to third last night. I think it was the gutsiest decision I've ever seen in sports by a coach. But took some stones to bench Scuderi and to bring up Brian Rust. And to put Adam Clendenning in the lineup, and to elevate Daniel Sprong, who is a rookie, and is, Mike Johnson called him, a junior player in his eyes still, to a third line. He got his first NHL goal. He was excited, and he spoke to reporters after the game. Here's what Sprong had to say.
He made a great pass, and I was fortunate to get a great shot off of it. But most importantly, we got the win. We played the right way, and we got a win at home.
Where did that come from? You guys playing the way you did tonight, it looked different from the previous three.
We just knew we had to step up our game. There were some little things we had to fix from the previous game, which we did, and we had a great result. We got more pucks on net, and that's the way we have to keep playing.
And Daniel, you got a lot more time on ice tonight than you had been over the first couple of games. How do you feel after playing that type of game and getting elevated the way you did?
Yeah, for sure. I got an opportunity to show myself. I got a couple more minutes, but when I got those minutes, I just tried to do my best and try to help the team win. And I appreciate the coaching staff and my teammates for believing in me. And I just tried to do my best out there and help the team.
How will you remember your first NHL goal, Daniel? How'd you see it?
I just saw it. Cully, I called the pass from Cully, and Cully gave it to me, and I just shot it. I saw Anderson sliding, and I just knew I had to put it high. And a pretty special moment, especially that three friends in town. It's a pretty special moment.
Is that a release for you guys, just to play the way you guys played the first period, the second, with no really goals?
Yeah, for sure. We came out real strong in the first. We just didn't get any goals, but the second period, Gino got a great goal, and then we just got to keep the momentum going, which we did, and we're all very happy we got the first one out of the way, and we just have to keep going.
You have a few games left here. Does that goal change your outlook on you possibly staying?
No, I don't think so. I still have to keep playing the right way and just keep playing the way I have to play. It's nice to get the first one out of the way, but we got the win. That's the most important. And we're back against Toronto Saturday, and tomorrow's a good day for practice and fix a couple things. But we just got to get back to work. One game won't let you get to the playoffs, but we have to keep taking this momentum and keep going strong.
And there's a little bit of shock before your celebration there. Did you take it all in for a moment before charging at the boards?
Yeah, I took it all in for a second. And I always remember this goal. I didn't know what I was going to do, so I just saw the glass closest by, so I decided to jump on it.
Daniel, did you feel more comfortable in this game than you did on the road trip and coming in? Is that kind of happening a little bit more for you every game?
Yeah, for sure. Each game I feel more and more comfortable. Practices, we're working hard, and I'm trying to get more confident there, learning from the older guys. So just first three games, I try to learn a lot, see what the game was all about. And today, playing more minutes, I felt really comfortable, and just try to do my best for the team.
Are you still looking at this in some ways as a tryout? You still need to show them that you need to stick here?
For sure. I think every game I have to play my best, and there's no days off. I got 9 games to prove myself, and I'm going to take advantage of those 9 games, gain experience, and just keep going hard.
You haven't played a lot of games, but without scoring the first three, were you putting some, was it in your mind you wanted to get that goal?
Yes and no. I went through no goal streaks in junior, and I just got to keep going. Just got to keep putting the puck on net. And first period, I got 2 or 3 shots on net right away, and I felt pretty good when I was shooting. So I knew in the second period, if I got a good opportunity in the slot, it was a good chance of going in. But I was just happy and winning. But most importantly, we got the win.
Daniel Sprong of the Penguins, who the first three games played about 9 minutes each of the first three nights. Last night, though, he had 9 minutes through the first 2 periods of play. By the time the game was done, 13:07, 17 shifts. Average time of ice, 46 seconds. Played a little bit on the power play, just about a 25-second stretch there. But four shots and the goal, plus one. They had two goals last night. It's not like the final totals blow you away, but they had a number of great chances in the first period against Ottawa. Hornquist had probably the best chance of the period. He tipped one wide that Perron put on a stick. Perron had a one-timer in the slot. He also had a wraparound chance with Hornquist digging in front. Another one with Hornquist driving the net on a drop pass from Malkin. Kessel had a good wrister in the circle that was stopped by Anderson. Kunitz had a blast late in the period. They outshot Ottawa 16-6 out of the gate. The levy broke there a bit in the start of the second with those two goals in 2 minutes and 2 seconds. Malkin scores for the first time since March the 6th, which was an 18-game span. He had 48 shots. And Daniel Sprong follows it up there on the assist from Cully, as he calls him, Matt Cullen. And Kevin Porter also got the helper on that one. But kind of lost to the shuffle of scoring a couple goals and winning is the shutout from Marc-Andre Fleury, who's played all four games to this point. And Fleury was excellent last night on a couple of key, I want to say there were breakdowns, but on a few cases they were. Bobby Ryan seemed to have the bulk of the good chances for the Ottawa Senators, and he had one in the first period where Bonino had dropped one to at the point, and it was a mangle. Yeah, it comes down to the other end of the ice, and Carlson had fed him, and Bobby Ryan right in front, and that's a scoreless game at the time. Could have been a backbreaker. Here's what Fleury had to say afterwards about his shutout and the performance from his team in front of him.
What's this? Is there like a sense of relief after this one tonight? How would you describe it?
Good feeling. Those first games just seems like we're searching ourselves a little bit out there. No, I don't think we had a full consistent game, and tonight I thought we did, from the start till the end. That's more the way that we can play, and guys are good, and I can't say enough about the guys blocking shots in front of me. It seems like everybody was turning himself in front of them, so that's always a big help for me, too.
Do you feel like maybe you faced a few more chances, like, kind of odd man kind of stuff than maybe you did in the first three games, and are you willing to sort of make that sacrifice if it means more offense?
I don't know. It wasn't too bad. I thought they had some key chances, but I thought our guys came back hard and tried to help out, and just stop some plays. So they didn't get shots on all of them, and stuff's going to happen, so I'm sure I got to do my part, and we're going to clean this up throughout the season and should be in good shape.
How much do you have a lead?
No, it's good too. It seems like we could breathe a little bit, everybody could just relax for their game and not think too much about anything else.
How close to the game is that you guys want to play, getting an early lead or getting a lead first, getting shots, a bunch of shots early? Just how important or how close of a perfect game is that from that standpoint?
That's good. Like you said, I thought we it's our best start of the year, that's for sure. I thought we kept the tempo pretty high through the first and second and third. And I think just consistency through the game was good. And that's what we're going to be looking for.
Marc-Andre, I'm sure you remember when you first came into the league to see Sprong score in his fourth game. What was that like for the guys?
Everybody's pumped. It's he's a talented kid, and it's a good shot. We all know he can shoot the puck really well, and just happy for him that he got his first.
Marc-Andre Fleury got his first. He got the shutout in the first W of the season. Jason Mackey is here. Hello, Ovechkin. Nice to join us.
You got me with the OV. The Penguins have struggled with starts, and I'm just trying to fall in suit or, fall in lockstep, whatever that is. And,
that's fine.
Struggling with the start of the show here. But
you're on the Jerry DePaula attendance plan. That's fine.
I was coming from the South Hills plan, and they have every conceivable road closed. I literally got stuck behind a funeral procession at a merge point where they were taking 51 down
that's one lane. Perfect. That is perfect.
It took a while.
It'll be closed tonight.
First time it's ever taken 45 minutes to get here from Brentwood.
It's worth it, though. We've got the roundtable up and running. Jonathan Bomboli will check in with you momentarily. He is supposedly busy in the Penguins room.
Yeah.
Covering the day after, which seems to be the Phil Kessel meets the Toronto media again. A lot of friends he's got up in the Toronto papers. I want to ask you about the two guys we just heard from, though, Jonathan. First of all, Daniel Sprong. We played his postgame thoughts from afterwards. The decision by Johnston to put him in the lineup, was it a bold one? Was it too late? Oh, maybe like better late than never, I guess, but fans have been calling for this since game one when he's looked good out of the gate. What took so long, and what does last night's performance mean for him going forward? We're going to see more of Sprong in elevated roles.
There was a job open. Bo Bennett was hurt.
But Plotnikov was benched too, right?
Yeah, okay. I get that. But I have a feeling, who do you move to the left wing then? And you've talked about, you know, wanting to keep Sprong in his natural right wing, and we've seen Bo Bennett play left wing. It's not pretty. I mean, they think that he can, and I'm not sure why. But all right, let's play the innocent card here and just say that, you know, he really believed in Daniel Sprong's game. Was it the right move? Absolutely. Absolutely. For a team that's not scoring goals, here's this kid. I don't care about his play away from the puck. I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but like, I just don't look at a scorer.
I mean, you would if he gives up a couple goals and we're complaining about what a mess he is. But he hasn't been that big of a train wreck, has he?
I mean, he's had some issues. You know, you look at the cohesion with Rob Scuderi the other night. Scuderi throws his hands up. Yeah, there's an issue here. This kid's 18.
Right.
He's going to screw up. Did anybody look at Jaromir Jagr when he was 18 and say, well, his play away from the puck, you know, his play? You know.
Right.
If he can score goals on a team that needs goals scored, put him in the lineup and put him in a role. And I was saying this, and I first wrote this in the piece coming back from Arizona. You can't evaluate him in a fourth line role. It's just asinine.
Will they ever take Kunitz away from Sid?
I don't know. I'm beginning to really question whether that'll ever happen. And I don't think it's so much, you know, a lot of people like to attach the narrative that Sidney Crosby loves Chris Kunitz, and it's his insistence. Trust me, I know Sidney Crosby decently well. He's not saying I have to play with Chris Kunitz. What they're trying to do is notice that Sidney Crosby likes comfort, likes what he knows, and sometimes to his detriment. And he'll admit that, too. And he knows Kunitz. So they're trying to, okay, here's a new ingredient. Here's Phil Kessel. Here's your old ingredient. Let's figure out how to make this work.
Right. Is that too much new to put Kessel and Sprong on his line? And it's
yeah.
Like, where am I?
I don't think that's the right move. And then you're putting Sprong in his off wing. And, you know, Kessel doesn't want to move over there. So it's just kind of by circumstance. Now, if Pascal Dupuy were healthy, I think you might have seen Chris Kunitz go by the wayside already, because I would like to see that line kind of take more of a speed approach rather than like a chemistry back and forth kind of approach. And I think Dupuy would be a good thing for that line. They'll just have to wait until early November. But, you know, I like seeing Sprong with skilled players, going back to what I was saying, that I don't like seeing him in a fourth line role. You wouldn't put Bobby Farnham on your top line and say, well, he didn't score goals. I mean, that's the same thing of criticizing Daniel Sprong's play away from the puck. I don't care.
Yeah.
He scored a goal. He's got a great shot. He used it. I would say, Daniel, don't give up seven while you're out there, but if you can score me one or two, that would be great.
It's almost as if the Kessel addition, I mean, he didn't have any shots the first two games. Did they credit him with one for the third game, Crosby? Because he did have a couple last night.
He had four in the third game.
All right.
He had one attempt, and it was blocked through two.
Is there any reality to the fact that Sid was overpassing to him early, or is feeling the burden of making Phil Kessel a 50 or 60 goal scorer, and therefore he's got enough on his plate, let's keep Daniel Sprong, and as you say, just stick with what he knows on the other side of it?
Some. If you go back and watch those games and isolate Sidney Crosby, you don't see him locked in on Phil Kessel. He's not trying to, at all costs,
telegraph passes and
enforce things and whatever. Yeah. Does Sidney Crosby think too much? Absolutely. Does he worry too much? Does he, you know, put so much pressure on himself that this has to work right out of the gate? Absolutely. I think that's, you know, one of Sidney Crosby, one of his greatest, I don't want to say weaknesses because it's also a strength, but like you can't ignore that about Sid. He thinks a lot. And I think he's thinking a lot right now, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think he's the best when he's reacting, when he's reading off of plays, when he's just keeping it simple, going to the net, using his speed. And honestly, what he did with Patrick Hornquist, I think that was really good last
year.
Which
you've called for before, I totally agree. It just seems like,
why
not go to the line that worked, Kunitz, Crosby, and Hornquist? It worked last year.
I hear you. And I put this on Chip Dice, and I thought it was a really interesting point by David Perron last night that why – I think it's starting to work with Malkin and Hornquist. I should preface it with that. That Hornquist basically just goes to the front of net, lets Malkin hold on to the puck for as long as he wants to, lets him enter the zone with it, and Malkin loves that. That's what he wants.
So he does like that.
So, I mean, that
And they were good last night, right? That line was good.
Oh, my God, they were fantastic. But
although Perron couldn't finish, but that's a different story.
Give the guy a break, man. He played physical. He went to the net, had seven. If that's the David Perron that shows up every night, that David Perron will convert.
If he shows up every night and doesn't finish, though, we're bitching about him for not being able to.
Yeah, well, you know what? If David Perron does that for 10 games, if he has 10 games at seven shots a clip and he's 0 for 70, I'll go there and criticize him. But right now, to me, that was a completely different David Perron that showed up last night.
So this is not the game to be stripping Hornquist off Malkin's line, because they looked good last night.
Yeah, I mean, you stick with it for now.
Yeah.
But I still, if they come out flat on Saturday, I still don't know how long I ride it. I think Mike Johnston made a mistake in not looking at Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel in training camp. And I would have said that regardless.
Did he have the power to do that, or was that? I mean,
he's the coach of the team.
I know he is, but I wonder if how puppet he is. Does he?
I don't care. I don't think that Sidney Crosby would have thrown a tantrum. And I know that's the narrative that's going to get associated with this—that Sidney has to have Phil and blah blah blah.
Or Jim Rutherford would have thrown a tantrum, or at least Grim Rutherford would have thrown a tantrum.
Grim might have. You know, Jim has no preconceived notion that Jim wouldn't have cared if Kessel went with Malkin or Crosby. I know Jim cares that they're not scoring goals as much as he or a lot of his lieutenants feel they're capable of. I can say that. I mean, Jim went out and did this, and he got Bonino and he got Fair, and you know, they did some things this offseason that should scream goals, and right now they're not. They looked better last night. But
would you say that he doesn't care? Rutherford's okay with it, or he is upset?
With what? With
the lack of scoring.
Yeah, I mean, I know this from talking to him over this. Like, he felt that this is a team that should be able to score goals, you know? And I wouldn't put it this way. I haven't talked to him in the past 2 or 3 days because he's been sick.
Rutherford's been sick.
He's been sick.
Mumps?
No. He was there last night. I was surprised.
Is he playing with five defensemen?
Jim was not there on Tuesday, and I'll say it now because he's back, but I almost tweeted it out just kind of making a joke that this team has been so bad it made its poor GM sick. You know? What I'm saying is I've had numerous conversations with Rutherford since the summer about talking about being able to score goals, and it's tough to score goals in this league, and we feel like we're able to do that, and there was a confidence that that will happen. I still think it will happen. But the fact that it wasn't happening in the beginning of the season, I wouldn't see how he would be happy with that. I wouldn't see how anybody would be happy with that.
Right. They were concerned. Players admitted last night. We were concerned. I mean, pressure was on. We knew it.
Yeah.
As it should have been.
And they said after Tuesday's game, a lot of them, Letang was one, Fleury was another, that, you know, we only made the playoffs by 1 point last year. They just, you know, frittered away 6 points based on the fact that they had some serious holes in their game.
Like, they were becoming the talk of the league in a bad way.
They and Columbus. They were, like, going back and forth.
It's and worse like, for them because they have the higher profile.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, you could make a case that Columbus more was expected of them, but it's almost like who's going to get fired first. And I think the Penguins, you know, kind of took a step back, and everybody's going to look at Todd Richards tonight if they don't win. Like,
he's the next in the crossfire. Well, to that point, Johnston's job. Was it on the line last night? Like, if could you have seen a firing today if they did win that game? Is it that tenuous? Or are they going to give him a 10-game sample or a 20-game sample or wait till Fair and Dupuis come in because that's our team? And they could hide behind a lot of excuses, but you're right in the fact that they just made the playoffs by a point last year. That's the reality. You can't wait too long.
Yeah. I think a lot of it would have had more how they played than the result. If they would have gotten their doors blown off 5-0 or something like that, yeah,
I think guys are complaining on the bench, or yeah.
If you lose 4-3 and just, you know, you play a good hockey game, and you just happen to get beat, then no, I don't think it would have happened. So it's tough to say that. I can
the moves he made, Johnston, the lineup changes, were they panic desperation moves or just no-brainer?
I think they were no-brainer based on watching the team and how they've played. And
I think it's tough to sit Scuderi. That's the first time he'd sat in a long time.
Not if you watch it. Not if you. No, if We talked about this coming out of camp. If you look objectively at who are your best six defensemen, take away names, faces, reputations, cap hits, anything like that, Rob Scuderi was not in that group. And they can spin the narrative any way they want.
But he's a veteran of status.
I don't care.
Well, I know you don't care that it's the move that should have been made, but I'm just saying for Mike Johnston to go in and say, Scud, you're out, I think that it takes a little. I got to give him a little bit of credit for that initiative.
I do too, but I'm just saying Mike Johnston isn't doing that for like a personal slight. He's not doing it to say, I need to jumpstart something. He's looking at it and saying, Rob Scuderi was not as good as the next guy I can put in
okay,
there.
Okay, I'll buy that. And Sprong, we both think, should have been higher sooner anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not that tough of a call. Now, Clendenning to go in.
Oh, that's a no-brainer.
Really?
He and Erickson aren't even in the same ballpark.
He played like four NHL games, though.
Clendenning?
Right.
No, he played more? 21 or 22.
22 games?
And he cracked the Blackhawks lineup, like, you know, with Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. And,
okay.
I mean, some decent back-end guys there.
Rust, though, to call him up. I mean, he juggled a few things last night with younger players.
I thought it was a gutsy move to put Rust in and not Plotnikov.
Like, you're relying on Rust, Farnham, Clendenning, and Sprong, who's going up to the third line, on a night where your job might be on the line. Collectively, it takes a little bit of guts. Then again, he had to do something.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at it too objectively, who are his most experienced players? Brian Rust is a more experienced player than Sergei Plotnikov.
Yeah, that's true. If that was the switch.
I mean,
I think
Rust was 12F last night, maybe Farnham, whatever. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, they're both more experienced than Plotnikov. I don't know what's going on with Plotnikov, and it's really tough to kind of discern because of the language barrier. But I mean, he was so good in the preseason, and he has looked so lost in the regular season outside of like the third period at Arizona when he was on that line with Bonino and Bennett. Like,
can you get a read on him? Have you talked to Plotnikov much? I mean,
you can't. I mean, it's very, very limited.
So he could be a head case right now for all we know.
Yeah. Exactly. And people ask, I can't give you an accurate answer. And that's, I'm not saying that like, you know, shame on Plotnikov or the Penguins or something like that. I mean, it's,
right.
If I would go to Russia, you wouldn't be able to get a read on my emotions. I mean, it's a difficult circumstance. And I feel for the kid too that, you know, this would be a great time to have Sergei Gonchar around. Not necessarily, you know, in a playing role, but like.
To score a power play goal, you mean?
Yeah. No, to like go out to dinner and have a glass of wine with and like, just be told, dude, settle down. You know, I'm not sure Evgeny Malkin's that kind of guy, and it's not that that's not his leadership style. It's just like, you know, Gino's a little bit more of an energy, loose guy, where Gonchar can be kind of a calming, like, you know, when your dad kind of says, no, it's okay, relax.
Well, I thought Plotnikov was brought here to make Gino happy. Not the other way around, you know. Was he forced on Johnston? Like, I wonder if that was an easy thing for Johnston. Like, here, we've played him a couple games. He's a mess. He's out.
I don't think so. And I go back to a conversation that I watched take place in Arizona. Long after a lot of people left, I was trying to actually wait and talk to David Perron, which never happened. He was either working out or gone or something. But I wanted to get his opinions on some things. But anyway, so I'm standing in the hallway in Gila Riba Arena in Phoenix, or Glendale. And Johnston's talking to Dave King, who was
Dave King,
Plotnikov's coach in Russia.
Oh.
In the KHL. And, you know, Sergei comes over and, you know, Johnston's kind of given him a couple words of, you know, good in the third period and energy and checking and that sort of thing. And Plotnikov's kind of smiling and, you know, Mike continues to talk to Dave King for a while just about Plotnikov, kind of how to get through to him or whatever. So I get a feeling, and I mean, Mike Johnston is not a dummy. As many people want to bury him, he is a very, very smart guy. And I don't
just ask him, he'll tell you.
Al, I think a lot of people
attach to him. Just get his book at the library.
Yeah.
He'll tell you.
I mean, I own it, and I have tried to appreciate what Mike Johnston is. Not, do I think he's done everything right? No, I think he screwed up a lot this year. But I think he's trying to find a way to best utilize Sergei Plotnikov, and that has not happened yet.
Yeah, and that's true. And I'm sure good to seek out his former coaches, whatever you need to do to find it. But this is a critical time for him. He made the right call to get him out last night. And now, based on the success last night, they get Toronto coming in Saturday. I mean, I could see Zatkov playing because they have to get him in for a game here. But probably he sticks with the same lineup that worked, right? It's not time to be experimenting too much. You got something that worked. You better ride this for a game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it's a good time to play Zatkoff, too. I think you have to get him in. They don't have any back-to-backs early. You know, I guess
you could play Florida next week.
Florida, Dallas. Tuesday. I don't want them against Dallas. I would want Fleury against Dallas. But Florida's been playing well.
Yeah.
And what, Yag scored twice last night? They're 3-1. And I think I'd take him against Toronto, give Fleury both next week. And
how does Zatkoff look in preseason? Are you ready to go?
He's fine. He played that Columbus game. It was very good.
Oh, yeah.
The first one. And then there was I think it was his second one that, I mean, he was bad. They were bad. Like, it was just all over. I don't, maybe that was the Detroit game, I think.
Okay.
Zatkoff played.
Where seems right. Yeah, they got skunked.
It was just. But I'm not going to blame Jeff Zatkoff for the defense there. But.
Well, Fleury, I mean, has been a non-story. It's amazing. Like, Mark
Andre
Fleury
right?
become, nobody questions him at all. He's not even talked about. And deservedly so. He's been so good. Would you agree? I mean, the first four games, he's kept him in, some of them. And
yeah. I mean, I thought Fleury was probably average to below average against the Canadiens.
Okay.
I mean, their first two goals were from 44 and 36 feet. I don't care what happens. You have to stop those pucks.
Right.
But
certainly not the biggest of their problems.
No, he gave him a chance to win in Arizona, gave him a chance to win in Dallas. And he was obviously fantastic last night. And I heard Jonathan talk about this on the website, and I wholeheartedly agree that they played a more offensive game last night, and the result of that is Fleury having to stand a little bit taller, and he did.
Give up a few odd man rushes, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
And that's kind of the plan. I mean, that's what they're trying to do. That's what they wanted to do. You know, you take some more chances, play a little bit more offense, score some goals, and unfortunately you're going to hang Fleury out to dry. But, yeah, he's been really good. And I know I wrote the story going into opening night, I believe. He's been a complete goofball. Just typical Fleury. You know, Eric Ferris talking to the media yesterday. They've lost their first three games. He grabs a jersey, chucks it at him. You know, it's just
good.
It's typical Fleury stuff.
Yeah. Quick pause here on the Pens Roundtable Show. We're on every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. Jason Mackey, Penguins beat reporter for Trip Total Media. We bring the other member of our team in, Jonathan Bomboli, live from Consol Energy Center. It had been the Con. It's back to Consol. Updates on Bo Bennett from Mike Johnston and anything else from practice today. John will give us the details next here on Trib Live.
Devi Auto Park, located on 230 Buffalo Street in Freeport, where auto sales and service is a walk in the park. 70 in-stock Devi Ride certified value prices. We offer a wide selection of Devi Ride certified vehicles that undertake a rigorous reconditioning process. They come with some great benefits that you can't find at other dealerships. Online at deviautopark.com or call 724-295-2171. That's 724-295-2171. Devi Auto Park, where auto sales and service is a walk in the park. deviautopark.com.
The Robert Morris Colonials take to the brand new Joe Walton Stadium turf in Moon Township six times in 2015. Season, group, and individual game tickets are on sale now. New ticket prices for the 2015 football season are in effect and offer many group opportunities for Colonial fans to come out and support their favorite team. Season tickets start at just $40. Individual game tickets start at $10 if you buy in advance and $12 day of game. There are also special discounts for kids, seniors, and military. There will be several promotional giveaways and fireworks following the October 24th game against Duquesne. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit rmutickets.com or call the RMU Ticket Office at 412-397-4949.
The Sports Grill is a relaxing, family-friendly, come-as-you-are restaurant located on Freedom Road in Cranberry Township. At the Sports Grill, the focus is certainly on local athletes, from the little stars on the rise to the Hall of Famers. The Sports Grill has become a local gathering place to showcase all the talents from local athletes. It is truly the local coaches, ADs, players, and the moms and dads who make the local athletic tradition an integral part of the Sports Grill. The Sports Grill features 40 LED screens to watch all the Steelers games, with three of them 75 inches. For more information, check us out online at thesportsgrillcranberry.com. That's thesportsgrillcranberry.com.
Before every Steelers game, don't miss the Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show, the best and most comprehensive Pittsburgh pregame show, taking you right up to kickoff. All the Steelers insiders from the Trib and exclusive Steeler player interviews, plus live reports from the stadiums, all right here on Trib Live Radio. The Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show is brought to you by Mike and Dave's Italian Bread Place, Deli and Catering in Greentree, and Mike and Dave's Boardwalk Sandwich Shop in Brentwood on Sawmill Run Boulevard, right across from Getco. Go online to theitalianbreadplace.com and watch the super sub being made.
Trib Live Radio presents the Penguins Roundtable Show, featuring Trib hockey writers Jason Mackey and Jonathan Bombouli.
Wake up, superstar!
Hosted by Ken Laird.
Want to go, pretty boy? Come on.
The best hockey talk in Pittsburgh, right now on Trib Live Radio.
We're going to play some friggin' all-time hockey!
Laird and Mackey, and we welcome, with open arms, JB, Jonathan Bombouli, who is live and direct from the con. Uptown, where I'm sure Mike Johnston had very revealing information on Bo Bennett and his health status, Jason. Wouldn't you expect that from
Yeah, do we have enough time for Mike the rest Johnston? Of the show to fit his expansive explanation?
It's probably a good question. What do you think, John? Do you have reams of paper you were penning down? What's wrong with Bo Bennett and when he'll be back?
Can I rant about this for a minute? I'm kind of new to the NHL scene, right? So I haven't had enough time to get jaded about this. It is absolutely Bush League what the NHL does with their injury updates. It is Bush League. No other league could get away with this. Because, like, if you let Bill Belichick say what he wanted about injuries, he'd say nothing. But they don't let him do that because the leadership comes from the top and makes him give out information. I know it's related to gambling. I understand that, but whatever. Some kind of leadership from an NHL perspective. This has to stop. It's stupid. Let me tell you what I know about Bo Bennett's injuries. Nothing. Injury, illness.
He has one. We know that.
You know, it could be anything. He's on the injured reserve. That's sort of the update that we have today. He's on the injured list, which means that, you know, it's not a day-to-day type situation. Beyond that, your guess is as good as mine. You know what? They're inviting us to guess. Maybe we should guess. I'm going to guess he stubbed his toe. That's my guess.
They didn't even give you an upper or lower body, not even a general direction?
Nope, nothing. Not a word. And you know what? I mean, what am I supposed to do? Berate the coach?
Yes.
Come on, answer the question. Come on, answer the question. I mean, it's not going to get you anywhere. It has to come from the top.
Well, I'm sure Mario will be holding a media availability soon. He'll answer that sometime in the next week or so.
They should just let Bo Bennett talk. He's got enough experience talking about his injuries.
He's sorry, probably so depressed.
That guy might be on his way to a medical degree by now.
Well, it was a nice run while it lasted, that one game surge that Bo Bennett had as their best player, JB. But we were talking about the lineup changes yesterday. How much credit or lack thereof do you give Johnston for making some changes to the lineup? What'd you see last night?
Here's the way I look at it. Individually, I don't think any of those lineup changes are you know, much of a big deal. With the possible exception of Clendenning for Scuderi, because it does take some guts for a coach to sit down a guy with the kind of experience that Scuderi has. But it was a perfect style matchup against Ottawa, so it did make a lot of sense. But, like, you replace, you know, Sergei Plotnikov with Brian Rust. Just in a vacuum, it doesn't do much. You know, it's a real minor sort of transaction. But when you add it all up, you add up Farnham and Rust and Clendenning and Sprong having the kind of game he had, and what you see is youth and speed, and you saw that on the ice. So, like, in the aggregate, I think those moves were pretty significant. Each taken one by one, I'd be like, you know, it's barely a note in your notebook.
We also talked about this earlier, and I think one thing that I failed to mention to Kenny, and Jonathan, you would probably agree, is what Johnston said post-game was really interesting. I have a mandate to go younger on defense. Use the word mandate. You don't put a mandate on yourself. To me, that is Rutherford, everybody in the front office, Mario, Morehouse, Burkle, maybe all of the above. I don't know, but it's, you know, go young on defense.
He talked a little bit more about that today, and last night he made it sound like it was a mandate foisted on him, and he had nothing to do with it. Today he made it sound like he was sort of a partner in the mandate, like that he was on board with it. I guess after you have a good result the night before, it's easier to get on board. But I think they definitely are committed to playing some young defensemen. I don't think that was just an offhand remark last night. They're committed to getting Clendenning in the lineup, and I bet you at some point they're going to be committed to getting Derek Pulley out in the lineup. The example Johnson just used was Brian Dumoulin. And he said they didn't want to put him in the playoffs, you know, put him right in the lineup in a playoff series last year. You don't want to do that with a young defenseman, but they didn't have a choice. And it turns out that's improved his game now, you know, significantly.
Now, where is this Where is the mandate coming from? This is the same management group that traded Simone Dupre and Robert Bortuzzo. So where was the mandate last year to play younger guys?
There was a philosophical shift over the summer, and I think it had a lot to do the minute you started to hear Rutherford become recalcitrant about that Dupre trade is when I think they started to say, and you know, within a very short period of time, they get Phil Kessel.
After the Kessel trade, when they traded for another guy that's 30 years
old? It's kind of necessity. We have to have guys come in and play cheap and play well. And also, we screwed up. We traded away a good young defenseman for an older defenseman that really didn't add much, if anything. Maybe he took away. And I think that's when they started to commit to younger guys. And probably around the draft, there started to become talk of, we're going to go young. We're going to go young. We're going to go young.
That's, I mean, fine. But Jonathan, I mean, doesn't that speak to they had no idea what they were doing last year? What a dumpster fire they must have been if they totally done a 180 in the off season.
Well, that's one way to put it, Ken. Not a very charitable way. I think it does. I think it shows that they made a miscalculation. Absolutely, I don't think there's any question about that.
I mean, look at
you look at some of the, you look at the teams in the playoffs, Chicago and Tampa, that went on long runs. They have that infusion of young legs, whether it's at forward or defense, and you need it. I mean, you need to have it. I'll give you an analogy. It's not a perfect analogy because it's minors to majors, but when you're putting together an AHL team, if you had a whole team full of guys that were bubble NHL players, like just barely got sent down, you're probably not going to have that much success because they're all upset about being in the minors. You needed a dose of guys who were happy to be out of Wheeling and were thrilled to be in Wilkes-Barre. Wilkes-Barre was the Big Apple for those guys. I think the same scenario applies on an NHL roster to, you know, to a lesser extent, but it does apply. You need to have some guys for whom this isn't just a job. It's not a grind. It's the thrill of their lives to be in the lineup. Bobby Farnham, Adam Clendenning, Brian Rust, they're all calling their parents after the game, talking about how awesome it was to play at Console Energy Center on a Tuesday or a Thursday or whatever the case may be, where for your veteran guys, it's just old hat. It's just another day at the office. And you're right. They should they have known that that was important when they were trading away Simone Dupre and Robert Bortuzzo? Yeah, they should have known that. But they didn't, and they changed course, you know, theoretically they changed course. I mean, we'll keep an eye on it and see if they stick to this plan throughout the season.
I think another thing, too, is just look at their free agents. You know, did they make an aggressive push at Ehrhoff? No, he signed it. He sold his house before free agency. You know, I think Paul Martin, they would have welcomed him back, but he went. You know, Steve Downey, Blake Como, were they ever seriously in the mix for those guys?
Yeah,
no.
But Fair and Cullen aren't exactly young pups, right? They've been in the league for a while.
Would you rather have Fair and Cullen or Max LaPierre and Steve Downey? I mean, I think they're two separate schools.
Okay, maybe those aren't big deals. Well, and you're right, Jonathan, because you look at the standings right now, the rookie leaders in the league, good players, young players, Anthony Duclair, Oscar Lindberg, Max Domi, Dylan Larkin, Sprong here in Pittsburgh. We're seeing the infusion of youth. But with the coach bringing this up...
You just said the magic word, Dylan Larkin. I have a crush on Dylan Larkin.
Oh, man,
he's
good.
So awesome.
Well, I mean, does Johnston balking at this, if he's saying mandate and kind of throwing it out there almost in a grumbling tone, and if he's referring to Sprong as a junior player last night, and on a night when he scores his first goal, he's throwing out, you know, he needs to work on his 200-foot game or whatever that BS is Johnston on board with this plan, or is he balking at it?
I think he's slower to come on board, but I think he's going to get there. I mean, geez, the results last night were certainly evidence in that direction.
He's going to get there.
I have to tell you,
he Greyhound station.
He walked back a little bit on Sprong again today, too. He said that when he said junior player, he could have just as easily said 18-year-old player. He was just referring to him, you know, basically because of his experience with junior players. That's why he called him that. He said, I thought the most interesting thing that Johnson said about Sprong today was, he's passed every test we've given him so far. And to me, that indicates a lot more sort of satisfaction with him long-term, like the idea of keeping him for the season and putting him in a prominent role. the idea of he's passed every test we've thrown at him so far is a lot more, you know, optimistic and complimentary than he's a junior player and needs to work on his 200-foot game. I hate that. I hate that when they say a skilled player has to work on his 200-foot game because, you know, that's what the two-way players are for. Let the skilled players work on their, you know, 100-foot game.
Right. Dylan Larkin's playing with Henrik Zetterberg. Daniel Sprong's playing with Matt Cullen.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And Johnson did say today that he has no plans to move Sprong up beyond the third line. Like, he doesn't think he's ready for a top-six kind of look. And you can certainly make a case that he is, especially because he says he's comfortable playing on the left side. But, again, with David, that's sort of a little bit less of a glaring need right now because David Perron was so stinking good last night.
Yeah,
he looked great. The best game he's played in a long time.
Well, we were talking about Kunitz as being the guy that would bump off there if Johnson had the real guts to tell him, hey, you're on a third line tonight.
You're right, and that would take some guts, and I think it could happen. But it's going to take some time. He's going to have to work himself up for that. You know, like when you're going into the pool and it's really, really cold, it takes you some time. You're like, all right, I'm going to do it.
You think Johnson has shrinkage?
Don't tackle that one, JB.
Yeah, I'm not touching that one. 10-foot pole. Thank you, though.
All right, let's talk about some other issues of this team. Jason Mackey, Jonathan Bomboli, Kent Laird, Penn's Roundtable. Power play is 0-for-12. Well, Jason, we've seen any progress here. What were you watching last night in terms of back to Gino and Sid together again?
I'd like to sit here and say, yes, there's been progress. They've gotten looks. It's been fluid, all that crap. But they don't have a goal. They don't have a goal.
With a two-man advantage last night.
With a two-man advantage for a minute 21, with a chance to put the thing away. You need a goal.
Yeah.
So, no, there's no progress here. At least not as much as you would expect. I don't know what the solution is. I honestly don't. Do you change the point, man? Well, you have nobody else to put in, and I thought Chris Letang's been really good.
Bring Sergei back, set by the Laird plan, seventh defenseman.
It's the second time you've gotten me
12.
With the Gonchar thing.
They're
JB.
0-for-12.
I get it.
You just said they needed a point, man.
You know what I really liked, and they've strayed from this, and I know why, is Crosby in the middle, Hornquist in front, Malkin on the right half wall, Kessel in the left circle. That very first look they showed, and I don't believe that Sidney Crosby is willing to play there the entire time. But when they do, I like it. I like it a lot. But as far as progress, no. They need to score, and they've been saying this since the beginning of the season. They need to get to the front of the net, create traffic. I think we all saw it last year with what they had and how aggressive they were with pucks, and Patrick Hornquist was a nutcase, and Kunitz was on the power play. It was great at that time. Until they do that, no, there's nothing there, and it's not going to open up the stuff for Malkin and Kessel on either side, and this team is best when they keep it simple.
What about you, Jonathan? What are you seeing here with this power play?
Well, first of all, I think that's where Kunitz can really really sort of prove his worth to this lineup, is in front of the net on a power play, because he's good at that. Even as you get older, you know, the hands don't go away. I think some net front would help. What I notice is it seems like they've been trying to set up Kessel for a lot of one-timers, and that's really not his game. I mean, it's not his ideal.
Right.
He's not like Ovechkin over there. He's a little bit
different.
He's got that wrist shot.
He was on the point to start the power play. He hasn't taken a slap shot in 2 years, and they're putting him on the point?
Right. But what you want him to do is to have a second to survey the situation and see where he can fit that wrist shot in. I think that is a great example. You know, we talked all preseason long about building chemistry, and to the point where we got sick of talking about it. But that's an area where you need, I think, his power play teammates, line mates, whatever you want to call them, Malkin and Crosby especially, are going to need to sort of learn where Kessel is most dangerous on the power play. And I think it's when he has just a second or two to kind of load up. Now, meanwhile, Malkin is the opposite. I want Malkin bombing one-timers if it's up to me.
Yeah.
I think that combination could be like really awesome with Kessel being more surgical and Malkin being more of a, you know, explosive. It hasn't happened yet. I mean, you can't sugarcoat it. 0-for-12 is 0-for-12. But I think that's where you could see guys maybe getting better as they get more comfortable with each other's games. I don't know. I mean, maybe not, but that's the way I see it.
Sounds like what you're saying, and I wouldn't disagree with this, JB, is having two guys at the point. Maybe Malkin's one And maybe they kind of shift the alignment a little bit, and it's not so much a 1-3-1. I would not mind seeing them tinker with that a little bit. It just seems like whether it's guys' personalities or just what's happening right now, like they're just it's not working for that 1-3-1 shape. And I mean, what are you saying with?
Well,
go ahead.
You've seen it a lot more than I have. How effective is Malcolm when he plays the point?
Decently, and I like the shot, but I don't think he likes playing there. And I think that's kind of the problem that, you know, he wants to play on the right half wall. Sidney Crosby wants to play on the right half wall. Neither one of them wants to play in the middle. They don't have somebody who really does that well playing in the middle. Kessel, like you guys are saying, is not a traditional one-time guy. He needs a second to survey. And, like, how do you make all that happen? It's not a perfect solution.
They don't threaten anybody from the point because Chris Letang's not going to beat you on a bomb at the point. He's a puck mover, so therefore the penalty kill guys can pack it in. I'm not saying you can go out and get P.K. Subban, but you know what I mean? You need somebody that can bomb it there.
Yeah.
And they don't have that guy.
Letang could. He has the tools to do that. He's got a good shot. He just doesn't.
To me, I'm less...
I think you get a lot of guys... That's symptomatic. You got a lot of guys on that power play who are good at doing things that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Crosby's good at playing that roaming slot role. He's really good at it. He doesn't like doing it. And Malcolm's pretty good on the point, but he doesn't like doing it. And Letang's got a pretty good shot, and he doesn't like using it. So I don't know how you fix all that stuff.
Identity, Jonathan. You had an interesting question you asked Fleury last night after the game about whether they're willing to give up some two-on-ones and if he's okay with that to score some goals. It's not like they scored six last night. They scored two, but were they closer to an identity? I mean, does Johnston want them to be giving up chance for chance and have a little pond hockey at times?
I don't think so, and Fleury didn't bite on that sort of line of thought. But I just think it's sort of it's unavoidable. You know, like if you're the more you're effective in the offensive zone, you're going to have a little bit of sort of blowback in the defensive zone. And plus, just on top of that, just I mean the hard math of it is you're paying $50 million for forwards and $20 million for defensemen. You're going to be better up front than you are in the back. I'm going to keep trying to push that agenda because, I mean, I don't know. That's what I like. That's what I like to watch. I like to watch, you know, a team that is willing to take a chance. And I'll tell you what, Marc-Andre Fleury is precisely the kind of goaltender who could thrive in that style. Because he can do that, you know, he's not the guy who's going to just be positionally perfect and every puck's going to hit him. He's got that play where all is lost and he just throws some furniture in the way and makes a ridiculous save. So to me, you have the goalie for it, so do it. But that's easy for me to say because it's not my job on the line when you lose 7-4. So again, that's going to be a tough sell for any hockey coach in 2015. But I think, you know, just incrementally, piece by piece, they might be moving a little bit more towards that idea. And I think that would be good for them.
Well, Jason, it's interesting that what Jonathan just said there, $50 million for forwards, $20 million for D, is that a problem in and of itself? I mean, I know when you got Sid and Gino, it's hard to just get out from under that. You're going to be paying a lot on forwards, but how about how they're structured and how they're playing, and it doesn't mesh?
Well, it's a problem if it doesn't work. It hasn't worked lately, so it's a problem. I also don't like that we're talking $20 million for D, and let's not forget that Chris Letang takes up 7.25 of that. So
true.
There's Chris Letang, and then there's like bags of chips everywhere else. I don't necessarily love it, but again, what are you going to do? Were I Jim Rutherford, I wouldn't come in here and say, well, looks like I got a trade of Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby to balance this out.
Well, you know, some of our emailers have suggested that. It's already gotten into funny season. When they were 0-3, it was trade one or the other. You know?
Stuff happens. So, I mean, I would keep that. And there's nothing you can do right now with Chris Kunitz, Rob Scuderi, Pascal Dupuy. And, I mean, that's $10-plus million. I mean, I get Scuderi's on the back end. But, you know, Kunitz and Dupuy, you're not going to send those salaries anywhere. It's just not – nobody would take those chances. So you're stuck with that. To get back to the question, I don't think it's that big of a deal. If you're an offensive team and you're going to commit to playing offensive hockey, which I'm not sure they've completely done yet, to me there is still some risk-taking and selling out that they need to do. And last night was a good step in that direction. But like to me, I've been saying this for a couple days now, I'm completely fine if they lose 7-6. If I'm Mike Johnston, you know, I tell them to go out there and score 7 goals. I don't care how many you give up, blah, blah, blah. They haven't done that. They're still playing to win. They're like playing to win games 3-2 now.
Like it's the Rangers series again.
A little bit. Like I just don't. You want to see them play pond hockey. You want to see the back and forth. They have the personnel for
it. They should be the best in the league at that.
Yeah.
You should win games if you play like that. If you can suck another team into playing that game, right?
I mean, JB, yep. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if we would be sitting here talking about the Penguins' inability to prevent goals, but they can, you know, they're putting up 4, 5, 6, 7 a game, nobody's really going to question that. You just say, well, that's the Penguins.
Yep, absolutely. And that's also what makes it so, like this start, the 0-3 start, it's what made it so puzzling. Like where you're just sitting there, you're not sitting there saying, boy, their defense isn't any good. I understand why they lost those three games. You're sitting there saying, what's wrong with this offense? Like, what's going on here? I think it's important to, you know, you talk about how the mood changes after a win as opposed to 0-3. And you talk about the silly season with trade Malkin, trade Crosby. I think it's important to remember those thoughts that you were having when it was 0-3, because that could come back really easily.
Yeah. That's Saturday night.
Yeah, and you know, it could come back because there are games where they're just sluggish in the neutral zone and don't get anything going. And when that remember that. Don't forget that 0-3. That was a real thing, and it was very instructive of what can happen when this team doesn't play the way it should. And then last night was a good example of what it can do when it plays like it needs to.
Or is the league just set up against it to be possible? I mean, maybe it takes more Derek Brassard to win in this league than it does Crosby and Malkin's. I don't know.
I think there's some merit to that argument.
It's a shame. Yeah.
It's funny. I think back to the story JB did before the season started about the drama associated with this team and, you know, a lot of it being so obscure. And, of course, the Penguins, who have $50 million tied up in forwards, go 0-3 when they can't score goals. And Sidney Crosby in the first two games has one attempted shot.
After they built a country club in Cranberry to practice in.
Why wouldn't they? Right?
Of course. And hired the most controversial winger in the league who ate hot dogs on the way to the rink every day.
You don't just make a couple perfect. Subtle tweaks and just fall one goal short. You have to make it the biggest.
And have a coach in waiting in Jacques Martin and maybe another one in the minors in Mike Sullivan, right? I mean, you want extra drama there? How about those two guys?
How about Torts?
Or Torts. Torts is Torts.
Sullivan's buddy, though.
Oh, is it really? Wow.
You want to play the same system? Get everybody on the same
page?
No, they wouldn't bring in Torts. I'm just...
If they pulled a trigger, who would it be? Sullivan or
Martin?
Martin.
Yeah.
You agree with that, John?
Yeah, I think so, Martin. You could throw Tocchet into that conversation, too. He has had coaching experience.
What do you see about Tocchet? I mean, he's controlling the power play. He's supposedly a big part of what they wanted to do, right? They handpicked him to be on Johnston's staff. Is he feeling the pressure, too?
I'm sure. I mean, just his pressure gauge can be tied directly to the success or failure of the power play, and it's failing right now. So I'm not throwing him in there at the top of the list. Yeah, the Jacques Martin thing is that he's the guy looking over the shoulder. You know what? I don't know. Like, unless you're like a really successful coach, the only coach in this league who is fireproof and who isn't looking over his shoulder is Mike Babcock because of how much they're paying him.
Yeah.
Everybody else is working day to day, and every other organization has a coach in the minors or in the front office or somewhere who's breathing down their neck. So I don't think that's an unusual situation, but it's a situation, all right.
Good drama indeed. 1-3. Saturday night game against Toronto. Speaking of Mike Babcock, that'll be interesting. And then next week, Yager coming in town on Tuesday with the Florida Panthers and Dallas, who you already lost to. So
doesn't get any easier.
Tie it up any way you'd like here, Jonathan. Give me your parting shot here on this Pens Roundtable Friday.
I'm looking forward to watching Phil Kessel tomorrow. How about I tie it up like that? Because I think he's the kind of guy who has that kind of want to, you know, stick it to the team that traded him away or the city that was, the media that was rough on him. I think he's got that in him, that little hair that's going to bother him. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be fun.
Revenge weekend. Bruce Arians coming back to face the Steelers.
That's right.
Phil Kessel and the Leafs. Got the Flategate Colts and the Patriots.
Over under on members of the Toronto media, JB, there today.
It's going to be – no, today wasn't because Toronto's playing today.
Oh, yeah, tonight. Yeah. That's right. That's
so
right.
So it's going to be a total gong show tomorrow. And, you know, that's going to be kind of the focus of the story I'm writing today is about Phil's thoughts about a horde of reporters that are about to descend on his locker tomorrow morning, how he feels about that. think you'll want to keep an eye out for that, because I thought his comments were actually pretty funny.
Thank you, Jonathan. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Yeah, thanks. You too.
All right, Jonathan Bomboli, Jason Mackey, your final thoughts. Now, I didn't realize the Leafs were playing tonight.
Columbus.
They'll get a back-to-back team again. They take advantage of two teams at home
right.
coming off back-to-backs.
Can you imagine if the Penguins wouldn't have won last night? They go into Columbus with Todd Richards on a very, very hot seat and Mike Johnston on a very, very hot seat. But I think this is all going to turn around. That's my parting shot. I think they're going to play very well against Toronto on Saturday night. I think they're probably going to play well against Florida, Dallas. I think they're going to have a good week, and I think we're going to look at this as a blip. I think a week from today, we're going to be laughing at what this start was, and the Penguins are going to be off to it. That's my parting shot.
Good optimistic trend for the weekend.